from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, fresh off of a long weekend, honoring those who have given the ultimate sacrifice and remembering those who they have left behind. We are back in full swing, fully in June. Lots of things going on, lots of outdoor activities as we are without restriction in the outdoors. Not that I've ever been without restriction or with restriction in the outdoors anyway, but other venues who have concerts and the like, outdoor venues, are at full capacity now, which is great. Just a big distraction. Just don't pay attention to my private airplane trip, and everybody can go about their business being fully, you know, do your thing outside. Nothing to see here. But I want to thank our friends at Not Just Guns for getting us underway. Also, Conquest Sense and United Deer Farmers of Michigan bringing you the show each and every week. Our website is wildmichiganradio.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, and I am Duran Martinez, your host. Joined by my good friend Joel Pytek of Fish Heads Sport Fishing Charters, fishheadswithaz.com, and you are currently out on a charter this morning doing the walleye thing. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
Good morning, Duran. I'm doing excellent, buddy.
A beautiful day out there from as to when we record the show. And you said you've got about 15 in the boat.
Yeah. It's been a pretty good evening. As soon as the sun came up, started getting a little high. We're fishing the St. Clair River jigging today. A lot of guys are pulling harnesses, too, but my crew likes the interactive part of jigging, so that's what we're after. And, well, with that cleaner water, once that sun came up a little bit, the fight started to slow down, working for them, and popping around to a few different spots to pick up a few more to get to our limit.
Now, when you guys are jigging, I know the Detroit River is, like, deep and fast. How's the St. Clair? What kind of weight are you guys using, and how's the presentation going? I mean, I know it's vertical, what's on those jig heads?
Well, you know, typically I'm using a one-ounce jig. Conversely to the Detroit River, which has a little bit slower current, we're up in the St. Clair River, which is a little bit faster current, and it's even a deeper river system. So It can be a little challenging, although you'll generally find in most cases in the St. Clair River, the bottom's going to be a lot harder, so it's easier to detect that bottom drop with the jig. So, you know, even though a faster current, deeper water traditionally, it's still that harder bottom allows you to find that bottom pretty easily, especially with a 1 ounce jig head.
Yeah, because I know Detroit, like I said, that's the river I'm used to fishing. I've never fished in the St. Clair, but I know, you know, that bottom, once you find it, it's great. And staying vertical is kind of a challenge sometimes, as I can imagine it would be in a faster current like that.
Yeah, it is. Two different rivers, quite different, actually. You'll find that generally the Detroit River fires up earlier with the migration of walleyes that come from Lake Erie. But then, you know, it's usually about 2.5 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks later, that we'll find these walleyes, the same schools, moving up into Lake St. Clair and into the St. Clair River. So the age class will generally be about the same within a couple of weeks. Although this year it's been kind of strange. We've had a very mild spring, not a lot of winds, and not a lot of rain. So the water in the Detroit River was typically a lot cleaner than we would generally see. And, of course, the Canadian side being close, you can't fish on that side. It made it quite challenging. And, in fact, so much that this was a really uncommon year where we were pulling bottom bouncers in nightcrawler harnesses a lot sooner than we generally would because the water was a lot cleaner in the Detroit River.
You know, that's not the first time I've heard that yet this year either. I don't know, man. The last few springs have been weird. We had 80-some degrees in air temperature, but that does not always, you know, that does not always equate to a warmer water temperature, which a lot of people aren't getting. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
I mean, things are still a little slower.
Yes, that's correct. Plus, you know, too, what I've seen is the the migration has been off. It was a lot later, and to be perfectly honest, it was 2.5 weeks ago. I was on the Detroit River pulling blades, and we caught four Atlantic salmon, which is very, very uncommon at this point in time in May. And then not only that, to add to that, we had a lot of males that were milking. So that told me that we had a very late second run of fish that were probably from the 2 to 6-year-old fish that were into the river system spawning later in May than they typically would be in the beginning of May.
Now, to me, that doesn't make for too bad a fishing to be able to extend it like that.
No, you know, and that's exactly it. With that water temperature would normally warm up, you're looking at the latter part of May that it's kind of a struggle, aside from pulling bottom bouncers and blades. But, you know, it's kind of a struggle in the Detroit River later on in the spring, whereas this time it's just started to fire up quite well. In fact, we're still catching limits down there. I'm bouncing between the St. Clair River and the Detroit River every week, actually.
Now, Joel, for those of us stuck here up in the Lansing area and farther north, what's the distance between the two rivers?
Oh, as far as by boat's concerned, from the mouth of Lake St. Clair, where the St. Clair River dumps into the mouth of the Detroit River, it's probably about 15 miles, I'd say.
Okay,
so that I don't know off the top of my head, but it's pretty close to that.
It's a little bit of a trek, but not impossible.
No, it isn't by any means. But, you know, the thing about Lake St. Clair is it's such a shallow body of water. If you got some unfavorable weather conditions, it's going to make for a tough ride across there, that's for sure.
Yeah, kind of like Houghton Lake. You don't want to be out there, you get a little bit of wind.
I'm telling you what, boy, that lake can get nasty too.
Absolutely. Joel Pytek, Fish Heads Sport Fishing Charters, is who we're talking with, our good friend, longtime friend Joel is, and he is fishing the St. Clair River for walleye right now, and actually picking things up. And really, I mean, you guys have had to get creative with the shutdown of the border. I mean, I get the travel over the bridge, but the whole border thing in the river, I guess that'd be just a little too difficult to control. Just to shut it down would be easier.
Yeah, you know, I don't know really what to say about it other than it makes it challenging sometimes, you know, Duran, when you got a river system or a lake system that shares the same waterway, and sometimes, most times, you'll find that the Canadian side has more favorable conditions based on water clarity. You know, walleyes, you always want a little off-colored walleye or off-colored water. But also, too, the river currents are much different in the St. Clair River and the Detroit River when it comes to the structures of the river, eddies, slow water, all that kind of stuff. So it makes more conducive for a better bite in a lot of cases. So it's been challenging, to say the least. You know, normally in the May time frame, we'll fish exclusively the Canadian side of the Detroit River. But, you know, it is what it is. You gotta make do with what you got. And probably the biggest challenge, we kind of talked about this before we jumped on air, was the muskie season. You know, that right there is hurting us substantially from a sport fishing scenario.
Well, we're definitely going to talk about that in the next segment. So, Joel, I'm going to let you do some fishing. We're going to cut away to a break here, and we'll come back, and we'll talk to you more, because we know the muskie season opens up first Saturday in June on the Inland Lakes, and it goes a little bit later on some of the river systems, but we'll talk about the opening here and what it means to the U.S. side and also the Canadian, because there's going to be some financial implications to the Canadian side as well. So, Joel, hang on. We're going to talk to you more in just a couple of minutes. Don't forget, he is with Fish Heads Sport Fishing Charters, fishheadswithaz.com. Longtime friend of mine, absolutely good guy. You can book a charter with him for some smallmouth, some walleye, maybe a little cast and blast coming up in the fall on Lake St. Clair. More coming your way. We are being brought to you by Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hi, this is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories. It's a granddaddy's gun.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez here in Lansing, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up the podcast there. You can pick up links to our friends at Conquest Sense. We'll be talking with Doug Roberts, the deer professor, about this year's group of fawns, how the parents have fared when we will see our first batches. Well, I've already seen one fawn this year, but it was rather unfortunate circumstances, so not in my hands, I'm just saying. But we'll be looking forward to seeing that, to talking to Doug and finding out more here in a little bit. But right now, we're speaking with Captain Joel Pytek from Fishhead Sport Fishing Charters, and he is out hunting the Wiley walleye right now. And doing pretty good until the sun came out. Joel, let's talk about that real quickly, because sunshine, clear water, not exactly walleye friendly, but you're still getting it done.
Yeah, you know, fortunately, what we've had, Duran, is those high winds that we had last week. We had some really high winds, north, northeast, and that crashed on the shores of Lake Huron and pushed all that dirty water down through the St. Clair River, and that's really been why we've had such a such conducive conditions for a productive bite over the last several days. It was real dirty over the weekend, but started to clean up substantially once things settled down. But you know, a lot of times what happens, the jig bite will kind of die off a little bit when you start to get clean water conditions, and it always seems like the go-to is pulling some bottom bouncers and blades with a night crawler is the way to go at that point.
You know, and that's definitely something that, you know, being ready to adapt to that stuff, that's why people pay you, is to know the conditions, know the bodies of water, know the fish and their habits. When you take away that stained, dirty water, because we know that walleye are very opportunistic, and to throw some scent and some vibration into their surroundings, that will agitate them, you know, that lateral line a little bit. And that's, again, how you guys are getting that bite. But it's always good to be prepared, so to speak.
Yeah, and, you know, you nailed it right on the head right there, because I'm looking at five bottom bouncing rods that I have. Everybody's got a jigging pole in their hand. You know, fortunately for me and my Lunge Pro V, that has a rod locker that I could stuff quite a few rods in. And if you need the storage. I know it's difficult to have all that stuff all the time, but even if a guy was to say, you know, in his jigging box, have a couple of harnesses wrapped up on a little pool noodle or something of that nature, just to have in that event that the jig bite isn't going on, or you got to the water and as soon as the sun came up, you saw it be more unfavorable in conditions, you know, it's always good to have something else in your back pocket, because otherwise you're spinning your wheels.
Yeah, and that's not good if you're paying for a gig or you want to show somebody just a good time to get out. You know, I mean, look, everybody likes to be on the water, you know, have the opportunity to go fishing. But, you know, those paying want to catch as well. And, you know, I know you guys do the best that you can, you and every other charter boat captain that we talk to on this show. You can only do so much, and you know, safety first. But day like today, I can see where it's going to be a little difficult, but still you've got that in your back pocket and you've got it going. Now, let's talk a little bit about June 1st, the opening of a walleye here in Michigan. But I'm sorry, not walleye, but muskie. You are kind of restricting yourself in that respect, because the Canadian side, which proves to be a bit more conducive to that type of fish, is shut down still.
You said it. Yeah, that's been hampering our muskie fishing on Lake St. Clair and connecting rivers for the last, you know, two seasons, basically. We don't really have a definitive idea on when that border is going to open up, but I can tell you that it's because the Canadian side has more lake surface. It always also has a quite a adverse
bottom structure and also deeper water on that side, with including less recreational activity, boating activity. That's all conducive for a better fishery over on that side. So that being said, if you can't access it, it hampers your success in musky fishing. And I'm not saying, Duran, that, you know, I can't go out and work my normal haunts on the Michigan water side, but think about it. You know, if everybody from Michigan waters is fishing those same areas, and we're all trying to catch, you know, fish that could be 16 to 20 years old, if it's a 30 inch or 50 incher, you know, they're smart. So heavy pressure, heavy pressure in the very limited areas that you would generally be focusing on in Michigan waters to catch muskies. And quite honestly, as a charter captain, you know, the clients that I do have, they know that it's not with me generally fishing, it's catching, and that's what we go after. We go after hard to put fish in the deck. And if it's not going to be conducive for a good bite, you're taking people out for a boat ride.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of luck that plays into that factor. I'm not saying you can't go out there and have great days fishing in Michigan waters by any means. But more commonly, especially on weekends, you can't really run boards in a good trolling program because there's so much recreational boating activity over there. I mean, you basically get run over afternoon on a weekend on Lake St. Clair.
No, I get it. I've seen it firsthand, and it's difficult. What about some of the areas of casting? I know they're called the thousand cast fish, but are there some areas that you can still kind of, you know, slowly sneak into and do some casting?
Yeah, there is, and it's all based on water temperature and the time of the season, by all means. But, you know, another avenue that I pursue, and we'll be filming a show with Lund Boats this summer, we're going to be doing a lot of casting and jigging in the river systems, the Detroit River and also the St. Clair River. There's a lot of big muskies that make a living in these deep, cold water currents of the St. Clair and the Detroit River. And I mean, some of the best fish that you could possibly hook into have made a living in these types of systems.
Joel Pytek, our guest, Fishhead Sport Fishing Charters. Joel, with jigging for muskie, I know in the Detroit River come springtime, it's not uncommon to hook into a muskie or a sturgeon of that sort, but I guess I've never really thought about jigging during the regular season.
Yeah. You know, it's not uncommon that when people are fishing either of those rivers that you have a muskie on, or you even have a smallmouth on or a perch, that, you know, somebody's reeling it up and a muskie's chasing it, or a muskie grabbed a hold of it. So, you know, there lies in the same fact that I just mentioned, but these big muskies have learned to adapt to that, and they've learned that there's a lot of forage and fish to be had in there, and that's why they are big. So generally what I'm doing is not only am I casting, but I'm focusing on some of the deeper water stuff, but jigging baits like a Bondi bait, 7-ounce, 8-ounce, jigging baits that keep you vertical, and it's essentially just like you would if you were vertical jigging for walleye, and a lot of the same stretches.
All right, Captain Joel Pytek, Fishheads Sport Fishing Charters, fishheadswithaz.com. Look them up. Thank you, Joel, so much. Good luck to you on the rest of your walleye trip. You're listening to Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time, interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks so much to Joel Pytek from Fishheads Sport Fishing Charters for joining us and giving us a bit of a walleye update. Still biting on the St. Clair River, doing a little bottom bouncing with crawler harnesses and a little vertical jigging, and doing good. Even though the sun's out, the water's a little clear, still catching a few fish. And we are going to talk to our good friend, the dear professor, Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense, makers of great products, you know, like Evercall VS1, the scent fire, the scrape tool, the scent bomb, all kinds of great stuff. Right here in Davison, Michigan, small business at its finest. And you know, for those of you that are not within the on the inside, if you will, of the outdoors world, of the hunting and fishing community, it's a very small industry when it comes to the producers of products. We go to these shows like ATA and SHOT. The shows look big, but there's very few people running companies like Conquest Sense. Doug Roberts, his wife Karen. Doug joins me right now. How are you, sir?
I am good, Duran. Doing good. It's spring and things are running.
And falling.
True. The fawns are falling and coming quick.
Man, it's, you know what? It's, here we go. This is to me where between now and September is a blur. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for you.
It's we're expected to have about 130 fawns hit the ground.
Wow.
We've got about 70, 80 bucks that are growing antlers. So it's kind of a wild time of the year. Although it's supposed to be our off season or our slow time, it's farming. There is no slow time.
I was gonna say,
it's
who
kind of crazy?
Who in their right mind thinks you get a slow time?
We've already got the first cutting of hay off. It's been wild. You know, with a mild drought, it's just the weather's been dry enough and warm enough. So we're actually a little ahead of schedule on that stuff. So,
you know, I noticed that when we were out, you know, my in-laws live in a rural part near Mount Pleasant, and saw the first cutting a few weeks ago. I'm like, what? What did I miss here? But it's been that kind of year because we had that really hot spell. And, you know, I mean, antlers start growing. What we've learned from you, the growth starts as minute the old ones fall off.
Right. I mean, you got basically a two-week period where once those antlers drop off, you know, the open sore, of course, is scabbing over. And that's what starts the new velvet. So you really can start to see it within 2 weeks. So the process is going good. You know, again, as we talked in the past, I mean, nutritional intake, digestibility intake for a deer or any animal is based on the water moisture in the plants that they eat. And we're still doing okay. Even though we're in a mild drought, there's still moisture in all the plants. So antlers are growing well. Fawns are dropping everywhere. So be aware, does are running everywhere with their fawns. So be careful on the roads.
Yeah, especially that pre-dawn time and the dusk time. We've been, even late night, I mean, we had a full moon with wind the other night, and we were coming home kind of late from some work we had to do. And boy, we had a few, I mean, they were small. They were last year's deer. But, I mean, they were run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You just wait for everybody to go. Then you inch forward and wait for that last lagger to come through.
Yep, the scared one. There's
right.
Always that scared one, the nervous one.
but
yeah,
fortunately,
for sure.
We made it. But I mean, right now it's that time that, you know, like you said, antler growth is going on and fawns are coming out and they're going to start to being visible. And we have that rule, man. Keep the wild in the wild. Don't touch it. Mom knows where it's at.
Well, Duran, that's a huge one right now. Yesterday alone, you know, four people just in my little area contacted me and said, hey, we got a fawn in the backyard. Hey, we got a fawn. My dog just caught and brought up to me. You know, as long as fawns are curled up and laying down, they are perfectly fine. Mom will come and get them when the time is right. And the fawn finds this area. Even after mom leaves, she runs off and allows the fawn to go find its bedding area. So you'll see a fawn up, maybe even blatting, calling for mom because it doesn't want her to leave. It wants more milk. The only time a fawn is in trouble, the only time, is if it's been on its feet for 3 to 4 hours crying and walking around. Then it's been abandoned. But other than that, the fawns have not been abandoned. Leave them alone. Mom will come back and get them when she needs to.
You know, I wish more people, just for that reason alone, just for that comment, listen to this show. Okay, I don't need to be heard. I don't need to be seen. That comment right there about a fawn being okay, that there's, especially if it's curled up, that there's no need to you know, rescue it, even though that's our instinct to do so.
Well, and again, you know, last year, for example, you know, I get a call from a bank and there's a fawn literally laying on the asphalt up against the side of the bank. Well, that fawn, obviously, it doesn't know where it's at or what it's doing. That one you have to pick up. Not that it's in trouble. Pick it up by the midsection around the rib cage. Keep it away from you. Don't hug it. Take it out to a wooded area and just lay it down. And mom, again, will find it by bleeding and talking to it, and they'll go off their way. So, you know, just be careful. Worst thing you can do is pick them up, hug them, snug them, you know, try to feed them, and then go, oh, maybe we better put it back. Now it's too late. You just killed that fawn because mom's not going to take it back. So leave them alone, and they'll take their course.
Doug Roberts, Conquest Sense, joining us here on Wild Michigan. Man, you know, it's like I know we go through this every year. It's like, I mean, we can almost repeat the same show, but we don't, because there's always something new and something different. And what we tell people also, Doug, is that not more times than not, mom sees you looking at her kid, at her fawn, more than you'll ever see her.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, moms always know the very small area that they put their fawns in. And now understand something. When they give birth, they'll give birth in a certain area. They'll clean them up. They'll, you know, get everything all set. They'll feed them really well. They'll let them rest. And then what she does is she gets them up and she puts them in different places. And that is so if a predator does find one, it doesn't find both. Or, you know, like we had triplets yesterday, or all three of them. But she knows where she has put them in the general areas, and she also knows her little cries. So she's very aware of what's going on. And if you're sitting there watching, or if you stay close and sit there and go, well, mom's not going to come until you back off. When it gets to a safe distance, she'll come and get that fawn, nurse it, and take it someplace else again. That's just the way nature works.
It just amazes me, man, every time. Doug Roberts with Conquest Sense. ConquestSense.com is where you can find him and their full line of products here. We get the information straight from the deer professor himself, Doug Roberts. And Doug, I mean, twins, triplets, how common is that in the wild?
Twins are extremely common. Once you have a mom, even single moms, first time moms can have twins. But once they've had a set of fawns, twins are the norm. I always say for every set of triplets you get, you'll have an older doe have a single. Yearling, first time moms, doe fawns that have now turned one, they're going to, you know, they get bred at 1.5. They have fawns at 2. They can have singles. Again, it depends on body size. Depends on the nutrition that they get and the wintering conditions that they've gone through, whether they'll absorb or whether they'll hold them and actually fawn them out. So nature is perfect in how it takes care of them and keeps the mom alive first, the fawns come second.
You know, and with the winter we kind of had last year, we should have a pretty good bumper crop, I'm thinking.
we'll have an amazing fawn crop this year. You know, the downside is, the reality of it is that we lose about 60% of the fawn crop every year to some type of mortality prior to what we call weaning time, which is September.
Mm-hmm.
That's when mom basically stops nursing them. They're on solid food. If you just do the mathematics of what the DNR says we have for a deer herd, we're probably very fortunate that happens, because we'd be overrun with whitetail.
All right, Doug Roberts, our guest. We're going to talk more about whitetail in Michigan, the fawn crop, the antler growth, and all the other good stuff. Find them online, conquestsense.com. More coming your way here on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pull tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by United Deer Farmers of Michigan, UDFOM.com. Find them, and find them at thetruthaboutcwd.com, as they are working very hard, not only on their own group of deer and wildlife here in the state of Michigan, but to help our own in the wild as well. Back to Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense. Doug, we talked a little bit about fawns in the first part of the segment, the first segment of our conversation, rather. But I want to turn it over to antler growth. It may have a little bit of a jump start with some of that hot weather, that warmer weather. And I've seen the Conquest Sense cam, and you've got some, I mean, I'm sorry. It looks like, you know, September already with some of your deer, but you've got some serious antler growth going on.
We really do. And honestly, you're exactly right. The warmer early season temps kind of kicked everything in gear. They still have a certain number of days within reason of what they're going to grow, but they seem to have started growing a little faster, a little sooner. The live cam that you're watching, that's a new buck we call Justice. And he was a beautiful 6x6 last year as a 2-year-old, but real spindly. And this year, if you watch it, he is coming out just super heavy. Now, he's got triple brow dines. I'm not real excited about that because, you know, I like clean.
Mm-hmm.
But the mass and he's going out. He's going to be a wide deer. He's a Bruce son. So I happened to see him the other day, and I don't like looking at my bucks. I just wish my life away when I look at him this time of year. But I happened to see him, and I was like, oh, my goodness, are you coming out heavy this year? So kind of exciting to see it, but now I'm wondering what's he going to end up being again. So I play mind games with myself, but the antler growth is good. As long as we keep getting rains and keep things growing and keep things lush, full of moisture in the plants, the antlers are going to grow extremely well this year.
You know, we started out warm and thick and green. Like you said, we've had a little bit of this this light drought going on. Hopefully, some more rain in the forecast. Not only for the deer, of course, but for the farming and just the general health of everything around us. But you know, this is when I need to grab my good friend Andy Provenzano, and he's a meteorologist and really has been really good about giving us the forecast for the next 3 months, for the next quarter. And but we've not done that yet. So, you know, how are you guys, you know, and because of restrictions and things here, I know food plots are an option, but, you know, supplementally within your confines, you are afforded a little bit different you know, way of doing things.
Well, absolutely. I mean, our deer have what we call a perfect world. I mean, they have 24/7 nutritional supplement, you know, in a pelleted form, which has the best of everything in it. Like even now we have a new colostrum booster that all of our breed pens have been on for a month. And they've proven it in the dairy, in the beef industry, even the poultry industry. And so now we're trying in the deer industry, you know, we got humic acid. There's so many things we're putting in to our formulas now that boost the nutrition plane. So they eat less, they get more out of it. Stress levels. There's no predators to worry about. So they just lay around, they eat, and genetically, of course, we have very, very good genetics. So we maximize the potential of those genetics, whether it be a doe or a buck, antlers or fawns. So it's kind of fun. I mean, that's why we're producing what we're producing. Some of those things can be transferred to the wild. Again, Michigan, no baiting, no feeding. So that really hurts. But food plots, there's still nutritional value in food plots. And so I encourage everyone to put those in if possible, because it definitely helps antler growth. It helps the nutritional plane for the does, nursing the fawns. That takes a lot of energy out of them. So the more you can give them, the better they'll do.
Doug Roberts, our guest here on Wild Michigan from Conquest Sense. Doug, I watched a video that you guys had shared, and it really kind of struck me. I thought about these things in the past, but it was in more regards to the fall hunting time where our selection process comes into play about maybe balancing the buck-to-doe ratio, about how hard a buck has to work to breed does and how hard he will work, rather, and what that does to him physically. And if we have a better ratio, that, you know, it's not as bad.
Well, you're right. So there's a number of things there, and that's actually a long topic. Let me try to condense this down. You want your older, better mature bucks, genetically proven bucks, doing most of the breeding, if not all the breeding. So if you have a lot of does and you're way overpopulated, you have a lot of younger bucks, genetically inferior bucks, also breeding ones that those bucks can't get to. Plus you have the dominant does, the doe hierarchy that gets all out of whack. So the more you can cull your doe side, the better quality you have on your buck side. Now, the other thing that we found interesting over a 10-year study is that we have found 1-, 2-, and 3-year-old does genetically, for some reason, produce more buck fawns than their older counterparts. Your 4, 5, and up does produce more doe fawns. So it's from a management standpoint, very important that you shoot the old does out of your herd, not the young ones. And I hear a lot of people say, well, the young ones eat good. Well, the young ones also produce good, you know, and if they're on crop fields and they're on good food plot feed, that old doe tastes just the same as that young one. It's just a mindset of the hunter. Now, when you get to bucks, that's a different story. You take an old buck that's rutting compared to a young buck that's not rutting near as much. There's a huge difference in the flavor or the taste of the meat, but not so much on the doe side. So I encourage everyone, shoot the oldest does you can. The dominant does out, let their daughters become dominant. They're genetically better, so you'll improve the genetic quality of your deer herd just by doing that.
I know it was kind of a sideways question this early in the year, but as we plant seeds this time of year, I thought maybe we take a chance and get that little bit of information out there as to maybe start some thinking in that manner. Because look, there's a lot of arguments out there. I can't eat the antlers, the smaller ones taste better. I mean, there's a lot of things involved. But if you are of the mindset where you like taste and maybe you like antlers as well, that there's a way to do it. You can balance these things.
Well, the hunters are the best managers of the deer herd. And you can say we can leave that up to the DNR. The bottom line is DNR can't do it. They can simply give us the tools or give us the regulations and guidelines by which to do that, with antler point restriction, doe permits, whatever. But ultimately, we are the best managers of the deer herd within the area that we hunt. And so it's important that science has now shown that there are it debunks a lot of old myths that we just didn't know in the past, and now we know so much more. Duran, one thing I wanted to bring up real quick, I don't know if you knew, but the DNR director had asked the NRC commission to ban all real urine scents in the state of Michigan at the May meeting. And I didn't know if you were aware of that. So that would ban all of our scents. And thankfully, the NRC commissioners really looked into the science and looked into the structure of it, and right now feel that would not be in the best interest to take that tool away from hunters. So they're going to continue with the new RHSA, which is the Responsible Hunting Scent Association DPP standards, which used to be the ATA. Mm-hmm. So for the last 2 years, we've been under these standards by which we collect and we manufacture and sell to the hunters. So it looks like they're going to continue with that process and add what we call the RT quick test. The RT quick test is very interesting. It takes a sample of product and it amplifies it 10,000 times and is able to detect super sensitive CWD prions within those samples if they're there. And it's way above, beyond an infection rate. And so all of the urines now that are sold through the DPP standards will have to do this test on all of their batches. And so it looks like the NRC commission, which is coming up, I believe, June 11th. So hunters have to understand if they really want to continue using scents, let the commission know that they do not want real urine scents banned in the state of Michigan. And honestly, every group was against the ban. MUCC, QDMA, the National Association, every group has been against that. So, so far we have good support to continue and move forward to use those scents, but we have to pay attention.
All right, we'll put that up on the website and on our Facebook page. And Doug, as always, thank you so much for joining us here. Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense. Also thanking our friends at Not Just Guns and United Deer Farmers of Michigan for bringing you us. We are Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.